Radio Free Alaska. Welcome to Radio Free Alaska. Today is February 13th, 2023. It's a glorious day in the neighborhood, broadcasting freedom in an unfree world from an undisclosed location in the middle of an undisclosed location, which looks out over the middle of nowhere. So I want to thank you for joining us today for Radio Free Alaska as we broadcast many different topics here at Radio Free Alaska, but primarily we are trying to answer the question that given the failure of the Western world as we see, as it collapses around us, we have to answer the question, what do we do now? Now, many of you might remember there was a movie that was done, I forget who the actor was, but it was called The Postman. And this was about after the United States had completely collapsed. And I think it was Kevin Costner, he was essentially going through Oregon and he'd come upon a jacket that belonged to a postman. And he picked up some mail and decided to deliver it. And as he traveled through the wilderness, he traveled through an unorganized chaos, as the social order had completely collapsed, and what was left were just portions of a remnant here and there trying to make out some kind of a life. And he arrived as the postman and brought them hope that there was some semblance of normalcy remaining somewhere. And even though he didn't want the burden of leading these people back into some form of normalcy, it was nonetheless assigned to him. And this was kind of the morality of the story, that ultimately the young people would take over in trying to rebuild something. But we have a real problem in our nation right now, because the nation has been completely overthrown by gangsters, mafiosi, corrupt politicians, pedophiles, traitors, liars, cowards, etc., who occupy the highest offices in the land. And they're using their office to build their own personal wealth as they seek the status of oligarch, accumulating vast amounts of wealth and spending money that really doesn't exist. They're spending money from federal coffers that are completely detached from the notion of a balanced budget, or that even require a tax dollar to allow for the spending. It'd be one thing if they were disciplined to the idea that if the only money they could spend were tax dollars, they would have to report to the taxpayer concerning what they were doing. But they have long since abandoned the idea that they're spending taxpayer money. They're spending trillions and trillions of dollars that don't exist at all. They just create them out of whole cloth. The Federal Reserve simply adds a few more zeros to someone's bank account somewhere else in the world, and presto, everybody's funded. And so we see that hundreds of billions of dollars have been given away offshore to shore up other nations' economies, while virtually no money is being spent on the United States, because any money that's being spent on the United States is coming through back doors and then only into the pockets of the politicians who have their hands on the money. And so under this circumstance, we have a real question as to what we would seek to preserve in America. America is not the America that I knew, not in any respect. It's not even close. Back in the days when Ronald Reagan used to refer to the Soviet Union as the evil empire, you know, the Soviet Union was a union of Soviet socialist republics that had joined together under the banner of international atheistic communism in order to quickly bring what was probably the most backward country in Europe, which was Russia under the Tsars, into the Industrial Revolution and to make Russia competitive with the rest of the world, which they did, but they did it through a reign of terror. Stalin, it is alleged, Stalin killed some 66 million of his own people. Now, this does not include the 27 million who would die in World War II. But this was atheism and atheist politics at its best and at its worst. And it created great fear in the West because the West did not want to be communist. The West wanted to continue to engage in market capitalism. Now, for many people, capitalism is an ugly word. Well, capitalism, that means, you know, large corporations like Exxon get rich at the expense of me and you. Well, this is not true capitalism. This is actually corporatism. And it's a form of welfare corporatism that we see at one end. And the United States has not been a capitalist country since maybe the 1830s. The United States is actually a consumerist country. It is engaged in consumerism, not capitalism. And the fundamental agent of impetus in the United States in this consumerist economy is planned obsolescence. So the idea is to build something that you may or may not need, but which advertising will cause you to want, then you purchase it and then you learn to use it. And once you've learned to use it, it breaks and you have to buy another one. And now this planned obsolescence is really on a very short calendar, typically between 12 and 18 months. You see very expensive items completely failing and require a total replacement. You know, back in the day when we had these refrigerators that where the doors would kill little children, those refrigerators were virtually impregnable. When they no longer would cool, you merely refilled them with what was called Freon. But when the patent ran out on Freon, DuPont was unable to obtain the profit margin they needed. So they legislated and asked the Congress to legislate a bill prohibiting Freon from being used and going to some replacement butane that would allow corporate welfare and a monopolization, an illegal monopolization to take place by means of the rule of law in order to create a profit center. Now you see something very interesting in that electricity is proposed to be used in the country. And if you get electricity, well, then now you can use an electric washing machine, and now you can use an electric refrigerator. Now you can use other electric devices, which supposedly are labor saving. But these labor saving devices have now turned into slave masters, where your smart meter is reading everything you do. Your television is actually a camera watching everything you do. Your cell phone is a reporting device that is reporting on you 24/7, your location, your pictures, your emails, your texts. All of these are being downloaded in international and national servers and giant clouds where your information is no longer private at all. The Fourth Amendment is totally gone as the government searches anything and everything they want belonging to you with no warrant and without any probable cause of any idea whatsoever. We're just going to search everybody all the time, 100% of the time. Is this capitalism? No, this is not capitalism. This is corporatism. This is techno-fascism. This is consumerism. Capitalism is a very interesting concept. We see capitalism practiced initially in scripture, and this takes place in the book of Genesis with the idea of Joseph, coming into Egypt after all the years he spends in prison, coming to rise up as the economic minister, if you will, over all Mitzrayim. And he does so because he is able to interpret the dreams of Pharaoh. And interpreting the dreams of Pharaoh, he sees that, gee, there's going to be 7 years of plenty, and then there's going to be 7 years of famine. Now, you know, when we think about 7 years of famine, you know, many of you have prepped, and you might have prepped and have enough supplies to last 2 weeks, or maybe 2 months, maybe a year. Very few have prepped or have the capability to weather a 7-year famine. And truth be told, there are very few resources that will last 7 years. One of those resources, however, is wheat in its initial harvested form. That is to say, not wheat that's been transformed into flour that's been on the threshing floor, but rather wheat in its pure form. And wheat in its pure form will last up to 10 years. So Joseph managed to sequester tremendous amounts of wheat over a 7-year period of plenty. Now, this is called amassing capital. Well, what is amassing capital? Amassing capital is putting aside some benefit, something of value, above and beyond what you need to sustain yourself in your daily life. So if you were making $20 a day and you're spending $10 a day to eat, then $10 could be put aside because it is above and beyond what you are required to live. And this is called amassing capital. It doesn't necessarily have to be cash, gold and silver, or some other form of medium of exchange, but could also be of other commodities. It could also be other things of tradable value. And the word for this is called fungible. That which is tradable in a transaction is that which is fungible. And so you see that cash is fungible, but so is gold and silver fungible. But you might find other things that are fungible, like eggs, for instance, might be fungible. In prison, of course, cigarettes are fungible. They're fungible items. Candy bars are fungible. And so we see that you have fungible items which allow for a transaction. But when it comes to money, money's value is strictly dependent upon its complete integrity and its complete neutrality. This is part of the reason why scripture bans usury, because usury immediately puts an addition, something else, upon the perfect neutrality of money. Well, I'll loan you this money, but I'm going to attach to it this cancer called usury. So that when I loan you 10 shekels, when you pay me back, you're going to pay me back 11 shekels, because this creates the rule of money. And in creating a rule of money predicated upon usury, we can see that the money is no longer neutral. It has something else attached to it. It has an interest rate attached to the money. And so this becomes a debasing of the money supply. Part of the reason why gold and silver are pure money, because you can't add or subtract from it. Although scripture talks about using unfair measures and balances, because people would scrape the edge of a coin in order to shred off some portion of the gold or some portion of the silver so that it's represented to you as an ounce, when really it's 0.97 of an ounce or 97 hundredths of an ounce. And what happened to the other 300s? Well, I put that aside. And after 100 coins, I have earned myself an ounce of gold without doing a thing, just shaving it off your coin. And so this is cast down in scripture and is called an egregious act. You're not supposed to do that. So if you protect the integrity of the gold and the silver, then there is no inflation and there is no interest attached to it. Interest is a contractual term. Okay, so when we look at the idea of money, money to be true money must be completely neutral and cannot have other things attached to it. The money that has been produced by the United States, on the other hand, and has been promoted as the so-called petrodollar, has been completely weaponized. So that the first time the United States said, we're going to impose sanctions on a foreign country, and we're going to be able to do that by the weight of the petrodollar, we have weaponized the dollar against another nation. Now, you might be able to get away with this once or twice, but once you've done it to a large percentage of the world, you should not be shocked when the large percentage of the world that has suffered under the egregious abuses of you cheating with your own currency, that they're going to reject that currency and they're going to go somewhere else. This is currently where we are today. So we need to make very clear that the United States is not a capitalist society. It is a consumerist and corporatist society that is now governed by the tenets of technofascism. It is not governed by men. There is no real government in the United States. Virtually all the organic offices are filled with corporations. And these corporations are allegiant to other corporations, which now pull all of the purse strings for everyone who holds an elected position. So all of the people that are in elected positions are servants of the corporations, not servants of you. When you look to see who their loyalty is when it comes time to vote, they vote for the corporation that paid for them to be in office all the time, consistently. That's how they hold their office. It has nothing to do with you. Your vote is completely meaningless. The only thing your vote means is that you consent to this particular kind of government. But when you talk about pure capitalism, talk about the morality of profit, let's talk about this for a minute. You know, in the world, all economy, at least when you're talking about human economy, is predicated upon human action. This is what economy is. It's predicated upon human action, such that a price for an item reflects the supply versus the demand. If there is a high demand and a low supply of the item, you can expect a pretty high price. If there's a very low demand and a high supply for the item, you can expect a very low price. This is a very simple supply and demand curve that you see on an A and B axis. So when we talk about this human interaction, there's really two kinds of interaction between people. One is a voluntary interaction, and the other is an involuntary interaction. So to give you an example, taxes are an involuntary interaction. You will pay me money. And what's the heart of the contract? I will come to your door with armed men, kick your door in, drag you out through your front door or through the windshield of your car, throw you in the back of another car, take you down to a courthouse, arraign you, try and convict you, and put you into a concrete room with no view of daylight for many, many years, should you fail to pay me. Now, this comes from the federal government, but what about mafias that loan money at high interest or banks that loan money at interest? Same thing. You will pay me on this contract. If you don't, I will have the sheriff come to your house and pull you out of the house, give you a shopping cart, and move you downtown. Or I will have a tow truck come by and pick up your car. Or I'll have the sheriff come by as we pick up items out of your living room, right? And so you see that these are contract terms. They're slightly different than the tax schema because the tax schema is imposed upon you, the contract term you entered into. But when we talk about a true so there's two kinds of transaction, voluntary and involuntary. Now, there's another form of involuntary transaction that we need to speak about. And that's the transaction that is engendered by fraud. We need to keep in mind that fraud is a form of coercion. Fraud is a form of coercion. The only difference between somebody sticking a gun in your face and somebody defrauding you is just the methodology. They're both acts of coercion that cause you to make a decision that you would otherwise not make. So in fraud, we have two kinds of fraud. We have fraud by commission and we have fraud by omission. So fraud by commission is where I make a misrepresentation to you that I know is patently untrue. You have a right to rely on that representation and you do rely on it. And it turns out that it's false and that false misrepresentation caused you to be directly damaged by it. And so this is fraud by commission, but you compare that to fraud by omission. Well, let's get into a transaction. Great. I'm going to sell you a hotel. Fantastic. What's the hotel? It's got this many rooms. It's in this kind of a place. The infrastructure is in this kind of a situation. Oh, fantastic. You buy the hotel to find out that the top three floors have been completely invaded by birds and that the bottom two floors have been used for prostitution for the last 10 years. So did you get a good deal? If that was not disclosed to you, that's fraud by omission. Fraud by omission. And so then the question becomes, did the person have a duty to tell you what the situation was in the transaction? Well, in a fair transaction, you have complete disclosure of what the events are. And what happens? It's a voluntary transaction. So someone takes a natural resource. Let's say he's a carver and he takes a piece of wood and he takes this wood and the wood he gets for, let's call it $1, because he managed to pick up a log that happened to be for firewood that was being sold for $200 for a cord of wood. He took one of those logs and he takes it out with his sharp knife and his skill set and he carves this fantastic and beautiful nesting eagle. And you take a look at this eagle and say, this craftsmanship is intensely good and I am desirous of having that eagle and putting it on my shelf in my living room so that I can admire it from here on out. Should the fellow sell it to you at his cost of $1? Well, of course not. And he's going to say to you, well, I put in so many hours and what is my artistry worth? What is his artistry worth? Well, what his artistry is truly worth is what someone would pay for it in an arm's length transaction. Someone he doesn't know says, well, I'll give you $20 for it right now. And another one says, I'll give you $100 for it. And someone else says, I'll give you $250. And ultimately, when the transaction closes, he discovers that his carving of an eagle from a piece of firewood is worth $250. Now, when someone pays $250 for that transaction, they know exactly what they're getting, and he knows exactly what he's getting. And it's a completely voluntary transaction. And a completely voluntary transaction has no elements of coercion, no elements of force, no elements of fraud by commission, no elements of fraud by omission. And that kind of a transaction being particularly voluntary is the most moral kind of transaction there is, because it is two people being completely informed and agreeing to transact between each other for this particular product. And we can see that this morality is further enhanced because a natural resource, which otherwise is going to be burned up in a fire, is converted into something of value, of esoteric beauty, that is going to remain in somebody's collection of things for a long period of time. This becomes even more intense when we talk about utilitarian items that are crafted to meet the need of a given person. So for instance, we live in a community and we need to fish, and we need to fish off the coast where the fish are. Okay, I'm going to take this wood that has gathered up here on the beach as driftwood. I'm going to carve it and cut it until we can create a boat in which you can go fishing. So this value now, I'm going to create something that otherwise would be burned in the fire or would sit and rot on the beach. We're going to convert this into a boat, and you're going to be able to sail. And not only that, I'm going to craft you oars with which you can paddle and go out to where the fish are so you can fish. This is adding value to an otherwise dormant natural resource. You've added value to it, and in adding value to it, it takes on a particular kind of worth. How much worth? Well, it's what a person is willing to pay you for in an arm's length transaction. And so once this is established, that someone has decided what this is going to be without elements of force, and without elements of fraud by commission or omission, then we have established the market value of this particular boat, and we have engaged in a highly moral transaction. This, in my opinion, being even more moral than creating a piece of artwork to go on the shelf, but rather creating something that is utilitarian, that is going to result in the people with whom this artist is living being able to eat over the year. And we can see this with any tool that is crafted and with any machine that is crafted, with its utilitarian aspects to satisfy a need that will otherwise allow people to survive in a hostile world that is not friendly to mankind. And in these kinds of transactions, provided that there are no elements of force, we have the most moral transaction, most moral interaction that can happen between people. Now, what about when somebody says, well, thanks for making the boat, we're going to steal it from you, right? That is highly immoral. Well, we've decided that what we're going to do is, we know that the fair market value is what this tribe over here will pay you for that boat, but we're putting a price cap on what we're going to pay you. We're taking the boat because we're bigger than you and there's more of us, and we're putting a price cap on your boat. So we're only going to pay you half of what it's worth. Okay. So when you look at this idea of putting a price cap on this kind of thing, this is, you know, these are wage and price controls that many economies have tried. And when they do, what happens? Well, the boat builder says, sure hope you guys don't get a leak in that boat, because I'm not building you another one ever. Right. And this is the kind of thing that takes place. And so when you see market forces come to bear against someone who is producing a product and expects to trade that product at a fair market value, when the market force is imposed upon that to introduce elements of coercion, it has an immediate effect on the supply of that product, and the supply disappears and begins to disappear. So this is the foolishness of people who hate capitalism in its utmost essence. Because when we're talking about market transactions between free people is a transaction that is free of elements of force and is a voluntary transaction, one giving value to another who is also giving value in return. It's called mutuality. So mutuality, respect, voluntary transaction, force-free, and fraud-free, these constitute the morality of true profit in a true capitalist system. Okay. All right. Thanks, friends, for being with us today. Tomorrow we will do a war review update for everybody who follows Radio Free Alaska. And of course, come this Friday, we will continue Folklore Friday with a further reading of Tusk. So thank you for being with us. Radio Free Alaska, checking out the voice of freedom in an unfree world.